The United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open and in session. God save the United States and its honorable court.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Please be seated. We have five cases on the calendar this morning. Three from the PTAB, one from the district court, and one from the MSPB, which is being submitted in the briefs and will not be argued. Our first case is Neonode Smartphone versus Samsung and Apple, 2022-21-34. Mr. Graves, you're going to have a busy morning.
Yes, please, I will.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. This court should vacate the final written decision entered in IPR 2021-145 because the board erred in three respects. First, the board failed to provide a reasoned, evidence-based explanation for its conclusion that petitioner had shown that a Posita would have had a reason to use Wren's direct off or tap selection strategy in his Hisatomi's device. Second, the board shifted the burden of proof regarding motivation to combine to Neonode. And third, the board failed to resolve fact issues that were material to one of the most hotly contested issues in the IPR, which was motivation to combine Hisatomi and Wren. So first, what was the board's explanation concerning its conclusion or supporting its conclusion that petitioner had shown a motivation to use Wren's tap selection strategy in Hisatomi's device? So the two primary references that were the source of the briefing and the focus of the briefing below as material to this appeal were Hisatomi and Wren. Petitioners pointed to Hisatomi for most of the limitations. Hisatomi disclosed a user interface that had a selection of menu icons. But those menu icons were activated by touch, and the claim at issue requires icons that are activatable by tap-activatable icons. So the petitioners looked to Wren to supply tap activation. Wren was an article that discussed a series of experiments focused on determining which from a selection of six and actually 12 different selection strategies, because there were multiple subtypes within each, how they would perform in terms of speed of activation and error rate. So petitioners looked to Wren to supply the tap activation. The board's analysis supporting its conclusion, if we exclude cites to cases and quotes and parentheticals, comes down to two sentences. The first was where the board stated that it need not address Neonode's arguments.
What page are you on?
I'm sorry?
What page are you on?
Appendix 33.
Thank you.
And the entirety of the board's analysis is at the bottom of Appendix 33 to the top of Appendix 34. So it said that the board need not address Neonode's arguments that Wren teaches a preference for touch because the board agreed with petitioner that even if Wren expressed a preference for touch, that preference does not rise to the level of a teaching away. Okay, so that, as a matter of law, is insufficient to support the board's conclusion that petitioner had shown a motivation to combine. And there's case law on that, Polaris v. Arctic Cat and Rembrandt v. Samsung, that the issue of whether the patent owner shows a teaching away is separate and distinct from the petitioner's burden of proving a motivation to combine. So that sentence is insufficient on its face to support the board's conclusion. The second sentence, the board stated, and this is at Appendix 34 near the top, At most, Wren shows that touch activation has certain benefits over tap activation in certain circumstances. The evidence does not suggest that these trade-offs would have dissuaded a person of ordinary skill from investigating the use of tap activation in Hisatomi's device. So that's it. That's the sum total of the board's analysis. And this is insufficient.
What more was it required to be? I mean, it bases itself off of the arguments. And it lists the petitioner's arguments and it lists your arguments. And it seems that they understood the case, and I'm not sure I see why that's wrong, that you are arguing that the motivation didn't exist because of all the preferences or whatever, or the arguable teaching away in Wren. And they addressed that issue. This is all in the same field. I mean, I guess I appreciate and value succinctness. So just because they only said in three sentences where they could have said something in 10 sentences doesn't sway me one way or another. So what more did they have to say in your view? It's not enough to say, even you agree as a matter of law, that just because there might be benefits or preferences for one would not be sufficient to establish the absence of motivation to combine, right?
Yes, in the abstract. But the problem with what the board did here is it only evaluated one issue, which is whether the patent owner had proven a teaching away. That's the only analysis that we have from the board. The board is required to do more. It's required to actually analyze, to weigh those advantages and disadvantages, explain its reasoning, which it did not, and then explain or provide a conclusion based on that explanation of
its
reasoning.
Well, you're saying they are supposed to weigh advantages and disadvantages, so they're supposed to make a determination about whether this was the better or the best option. And as we've discussed, that's not what our law requires. So even if it said there are a few advantages here and a few advantages here, and you want them to discuss what you said weigh, use the word weigh. So even if the skills were not equal, does that dissuade us from saying that there would have been a motivation to combine?
Well, there are two issues there. So first, there's the issue, Your Honor, that you raise. And I would submit that this case is distinguishable from the Uber case and the Intel v. Pact case and Intel v. Qualcomm, at least the portion of Intel v. Qualcomm dealing with the Durr and Bergenet references, because for multiple reasons, right? But one of them is that in those cases, the two different options or choices for the design choice argument, at least from what we can discern from the opinions, there was no evidence that the choice that was found to be suitable or acceptable would have rendered the combination, would have degraded the performance of the combination. Whereas here, there was copious evidence in the record to that effect. Now, some of it was undisputed. Some of it petitioner did dispute. But in this record, that distinguishes this case from Intel v. Pact and the Uber case and the others that were cited by defendant. Second, there's a procedural aspect to what Your Honor has raised. We don't know what the board will do if the case is vacated as it should be. But as this court has explained in the Nuvasiv case, among others, the board is obligated to provide a clear evidence-based explanation supporting its conclusion in order for this court to be able to perform its function as an appellate tribunal. And the board did not do that in this case. This case is very similar to Nuvasiv. Here, the board essentially said, okay, we don't buy your teaching away argument, and therefore that's enough for us to conclude that the petitioner has proven a motivation to combine.
I'm not sure if that's fully fair to the board. The analysis, I would think, maybe starts at 31, where the board says, we do find persuasive petitioner's alternative argument, which relies on Wren, for teaching TAP, right? They rejected that Hisatomi taught TAP. They then say, we're persuaded by petitioner that TAP is in this other prior art. Wren, and then they go on at 32 to say it was well known, explicitly disclosed by Wren, and then they go on to address that petitioner says it's one tapping is one of a handful of well-known selection techniques. It has certain desirability and familiarity, and then they go into teaching away. In context, why can't we say that the path of the board is reasonably discernible, that they've now found where all the elements are disclosed, and they're considering both sides' arguments, and they're concluding that one of skill in the art would be motivated to put together a desirable, well-known, alternative way of interacting with the device?
Certainly. The reason is because what you've quoted, Your Honor, is the board's recitation of the competing arguments by the parties. Now, you've quoted certain portions of the FWD in which the board was acknowledging or outlining the arguments that were made by petitioner. There are other portions in which the board was outlining arguments made by Neonode. And the problem is that just pointing to the arguments made...
Please step back to the podium for the microphone.
Certainly, Your Honor. The problem is that just pointing to the arguments made by the two parties and then saying, we agree with petitioner or we agree with patent owner, is insufficient.
Well, sure, if that was all they did. But as you acknowledge, they then go on to talk about why they're rejecting teaching away over a number of pages, which all, I think, makes clear that they're analyzing the arguments, not just reciting them. And in context, I think maybe we can reasonably discern what they thought about motivation to combine. Why is that unfair?
Because the court must speculate as to what the reasons for their conclusion concerning motivation to combine are.
Is the board not free to say, I agree with everything the petitioner said? Does it have to repeat everything the petitioner said with which they agree?
No, absolutely not. It does not have to repeat everything the petitioner said, but it's not enough for the board simply to repeat everything the petitioner said, right, in explaining what the arguments of the parties were, and then say, we agree with petitioner. That's very clear under the NuVasiv case.
Well, we review judgments, not opinions, right?
That is correct, but there's a particular gloss on that in the administrative law context, which is that under the APA and this court's authority and precedent, applying the APA to decisions from the board must provide a reasoned explanation for its conclusion. And here it did not. And we would submit to you that this is not simply a pointless exercise in sending something back to the board.
Can we conduct a harmless error review if we think maybe they should have been a little clearer, but we know what they meant?
No, the court is not permitted, actually, to use that form of analysis in reviewing decisions from the board. That's in the Alacrotech case, where Intel made essentially that argument. Intel argued, well, the board didn't provide even if the court determines that the board didn't provide a sufficient explanation here. There's enough material in the record, substantial evidence in the record, to support the board's conclusion. And this court rejected that argument categorically. It said, no, that is insufficient. Even if there is sufficient evidence in the record, the board still must provide a reasoned explanation for its conclusion. So,
into your rebuttal time, would you wish to save it or continue?
I'll save it. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Panikowski.
Good morning, Your Honors. Stanley Panikowski arguing on behalf of the appellees, Samsung and Apple. Substantial evidence supports the board's finding of a motivation to combine. The board also adequately explained its decision and applied the correct burden of proof. The board's decision, therefore, should be affirmed. At argument today, Neonode's counsel does not address the substantial evidence issues, so I will focus on the APA issue that Neonode raised. But in the process of discussing the board's findings and reasoning and why they are adequate under this court's decision in Outry versus Geox, we will also see the substantial evidence cited by the board that supports the final written decision. Neonode's counsel said that the sum total or entirety of the board's analysis was at appendix pages 33 and 34, even beyond the fact, as Your Honor pointed out, that there are findings being made there that explain the board's rationale. As Your Honor pointed out, the board's substantive analysis actually begins at appendix page 31. And in that portion of its decision, the board did exactly what this court said in Outry versus Geox, 859 F3rd 1364, was an adequate explanation of the board's decision. In Outry, this court said, quote, "In this case, the board articulated Geox's arguments with evidentiary support and expressly adopted them to find there would have been a motivation to combine." That is what the board did here when at page 31 it said, "We find petitioner's alternative argument based on the combination of TAP as disclosed in Wren and Hisatomi's pull-out menu to be, quote, persuasive." And the board did not stop there, Your Honors, but the board then identified specifically which of petitioner's arguments the board was agreeing with and finding persuasive. And that complies with Outry v. Geox, where this court said, you can't simply say, we agree with petitioner without indicating what arguments you agree with or giving any sense of what evidence supports those arguments. And so here, when the board went on at appendix pages 31 and 32 to summarize petitioner's arguments in a way that showed the reasons for those arguments, that satisfied Outry v. Geox because the board was giving a reasoned explanation and adopting it as its own.
Even if we accept all that, where is it doing that for motivation to combine as opposed to simply finding that Wren disclosed TAP as a claim limitation?
Yes, Your Honor. The board does that specifically with respect to motivation to combine, principally at appendix page 32, the first full paragraph. And the board there provides rationales for motivation to combine that align with KSR and with this court's decisions in Unwired Planet, Intel v. Pact, and other decisions.
Now, it doesn't say motivation to combine. Would you acknowledge that?
Correct, Your Honor. It doesn't use the words motivation to combine, but there is no magic words test under KSR's flexible standard in this court's precedent. What you need is a reason for a skilled artisan at the time to make the claim combination. And the board at appendix page 32 specifically identifies that reason. First, the board says that tapping was one of a handful of well-known selection techniques for selecting a target in a GUI at the time of the priority date. And then the board finds that Wren teaches the desirability of using TAP, quote, for example, in dense displays where targets are close together. And then later on page 32, the board makes an explicit finding that Hisatomi is a dense device where you have targets close together in dense displays and you have a specific teaching in Wren that TAP is going to be desirable in that type of device. And then the board also finds that implementing TAP in Hisatomi's device would have been within the level of ordinary skill and would have achieved predictable results. Again, satisfying KSR as well as this court's precedent in cases like Intel v. Pact XPP and Unwired Planet. And so what we see there, Your Honors, in that paragraph, in addition to the remainder of appendix pages 31 to 34, is the board doing exactly what this court endorsed in the Outry v. Geox case. And in the process of that, the board also cited the evidence on which it was relying to make those findings. And that evidence, Your Honors, is more than substantial evidence to support the board's decision. Specifically, the board cites Dr. Peterson's declaration, the expert for appellees, at appendix pages 853 and 854, and then 856 and 857. And what Dr. Peterson explained in his declaration was, at the time, a skilled artisan would recognize that TAP is one of a handful of well-known selection techniques, and also that Wren teaches that it is desirable in dense displays like Hisatomi's. And one of the things that Dr. Peterson highlights is that TAP was very familiar to users. And Dr. Peterson cites Wren's teaching at appendix page 1776 that tap was like the familiar mouse technique. So when you have a dense display and then you have a user who may be unfamiliar with using touchscreen devices and selecting targets in dense displays with objects, the fact that the user will be familiar with the mouse technique of pressing down and then releasing in order to activate some sort of icon or application, that that was an advantage of tap. And Dr. Peterson, as well as the Wren reference itself, only identified tap as being like the familiar mouse technique. Neonode said in its reply brief that touch is also like the familiar mouse technique. But there's no evidence supporting that assertion. In fact, both Dr. Peterson and Wren at appendix page 1776 explain that what makes tap like the familiar mouse technique is that you're clicking on it, but you're not actually opening the application until you release it. That is tap, not touch.
Can you point to anything in the board's opinion that says they were persuaded by the analogy to the familiar mouse operation?
Your Honor, the board did not explicitly discuss the familiar mouse technique rationale. However, this court in Altria has made clear that so long as the board cites the evidence that is supporting the explanation it's giving, that that is sufficient. So when the board cites not just those pages of Dr. Peterson's declaration, but also cites two pages of Wren, appendix page 1763 and 1776, the board is showing that these are the particular arguments and these are the particular pieces of evidence on which we are relying for these findings that we have explicitly made here. And Wren at appendix page 1776 contains the rationale not just for narrowing down your options for the selection of targets in a dense display to touch and tap. It does that when it says that you have other selection techniques that are efficient when targets are not too close together, but they're not efficient in dense displays. So for dense displays, we turn to direct on, touch, and then direct off, of which tap is one variant. And says the Wren reference says that those are techniques that can be used in dense displays. And then it specifically zeroes in on the direct off technique and says, for example, direct off is like the familiar mouse technique, and that is why it is, you know, therefore desirable in dense displays. Even if the law required the board to have relied on something in the record that showed that tap had a particular advantage over touch in the proposed combination, the board identified that when it cited to those pages of Wren and those pages of Dr. Peterson's declaration that discuss that teaching in Wren and make the same point about the familiar mouse technique. So therefore, under any view of the law that Neonode is advocating, the board made sufficient findings, cited the appropriate evidence, and provided a reasoned explanation. And under this court's precedent, substantial evidence supports that decision, and it should be affirmed.
Is there any room for a harmless error analysis here if we're not entirely persuaded by what you're arguing?
Your Honor, I don't think that harmless error would be the appropriate rubric. I rather think that the appropriate rubric would be this court's holding in Nuvasiv, that what you need here is a reasonably discernible explanation from the board. And the reason why this court said that you need to have that is to permit substantial evidence review. And therefore, this court said in Nuvasiv that we will uphold the decision of less than ideal clarity if we can reasonably discern that the board followed a proper analytical path. And here, Your Honors, at pages appendix 31 to 34, there's more than enough to show that the board followed a proper analytical path, made findings that are well supported by substantial evidence, and complied with both Nuvasiv as well as this court's holding in Altry versus GIOC. So I think, Your Honor, that the reasonably discernible standard is what serves the same basic function that the concept of harmless error would here, but the court does not need to invoke harmless error because both NuVasive and Altry versus Geox support more than enough the adequacy of the board's explanation.
If we were to find it's not a reasonably discernible path, we have to vacate and remand. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Under this court's precedent in NuVasive, if you haven't met that standard, then what you need to do is to vacate and remand for a more robust explanation by the board. And of course, Your Honors, as we have argued, we don't think that a remand would be necessary here because there is more than enough at appendix pages 31 to 34 and the evidence cited by the board at those pages to affirm. Unless this court has further questions, thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Graves has some rebuttal time, 2.5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. So Appellee's counsel, over and over, I heard him refer to findings made by the board, supporting the board's conclusion. But if you will review, as I'm sure you have, appendix 31 through 34, you will find that there are no such findings. All we have are the board's acknowledgments of the arguments of the respective parties, two sentences of analysis rejecting a teaching away, and then a conclusion that motivation to combine had been shown. That is exactly the situation in the NuVasive case, where the board summarized the arguments of the parties and then said, you know, we find petitioner's explanation, or, you know, we agree with petitioner here. That's all we have with respect to motivation to combine. The board did provide an explanation with respect to teaching away, but nothing on motivation to combine, and those are two different analyses. The Outdry case is not on point here, because in that case, the board expressly adopted the arguments by one side and actually provided some explanation as to its reason for doing so. Here, again, we have nothing regarding motivation to combine. The board told us what it concluded, and it is possible to try to backfill that and try to figure out what the reasons were, but that's not the function of this court. This court is required to review not just the conclusion, but the board's reasoning as well to ensure that the board adopted a proper analytical approach. It's not possible to do that here, given the fact that the board provided no explanation for its reasoning on motivation to combine. The discussion of the testimony of Appellee's expert, again, looks to the evidence that was presented on motivation to combine. Neonode presented countervailing evidence from its expert, and it's the board's job to look at the testimony and the other evidence and explain the reasons why it agreed that petitioner had shown a motivation to combine. It did not do that here. And there is a real issue for the board to address, because this case on the evidence and on the record is distinguishable from Uber, Intel v. Pact, and Intel v. Qualcomm. There are distinctions here of a factual nature. They were presented and argued to the board. The board did not address them at all, and it was required to do so under the Provisor case. In addition,
also, as you can see, your time has expired. So we thank you for your first argument, and the case is submitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.